Band of Heathens will be playing the Ryman tonight, which, of course, by the time you hear this, will have already happened. But it's something I wanted to ask about. Ed Jurdy and Gordy Quist join me, and it's good to see you, fellas. How are you doing?
Doing great, man. Well, nice to see you.
Thanks for taking some time out. Just got to ask about the Ryman first history here. Have you played here before, and memories, or either as a band or a fan?
We've played one song here. Exactly one song. Was it at the Americana Awards in 2010?
Right.
That sound right?
Well, then you get to step out tonight and play a whole set of music. Reflect on that. That's a tremendous landmark for anybody.
Yeah, I mean, this is an incredible place to be.
And this is Gordy, by the way, speaking.
Yeah, so. I'm Gordy. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we're thrilled to be here, and especially to do more than just one song and kind of get to stretch out just a little bit, and to be here with Justin Towns Earl. It's pretty cool.
So the project that to talk about, which I've only heard a couple songs off of, but I'm looking forward to hearing the whole thing here when it comes out in mid-September, is A Message from the People Revisited, a Ray Charles record, which is hard to find, this album. I learned about it. We all know his version of America the Beautiful, which he released as a single. Get to that in a second. But let's just get the big picture of how this record emerged in your attention, where it came from, if somebody had a physical copy, because it's actually not on the streaming services as far as I could see.
Yeah. Our keys player, Trevor, he found a used vinyl copy and fell in love with the record and shared it with us. He ripped it to, you know, MP3s and put it up in Dropbox and shared it with the band. And it kind of blew our minds in a strange way. You know, it was released in 1972. And it's just strange how kind of the message from the people that he was delivering back then still kind of seems relevant today. And it just was really, hearing the record for the first time really kind of floored me. And we just were like, man, why don't we, I have no idea if it'll turn out cool or not, but let's just kind of go in the studio for a few days and mess around and see what we can do. So it was kind of an experiment to see if we could do it. And we ended up really just thrilled with how it turned out. It's an amazing collection of songs that, again, seem, you know, ripe for today as well in a strange way. It's almost like it was written for today.
Turning to Ed, can you talk about when you first heard this in its entirety and kind of what the circumstances were?
Yeah, I mean, I had a similar response to Gordy. I was familiar with a few of the tunes because I've been a big fan of Ray Charles. I think everybody is, but I had really dug pretty deep into his catalog over the years, so I kind of knew a few of the tunes off the record, but they were kind of out of context, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think hearing the whole thing as a statement and as an actual, you know, truly as an album and as you know, something that was cohesive in its statement, you know, both musically and lyrically. Yeah, I mean, it was cool, and it seemed like a good challenge, you know. We've just recently got a studio in Austin, and there's a whole other great story that will go along with that we might tell you. But so it was sort of like we had an opportunity to go in with no pressure and just sort of see what we came out with. You know, we set aside like 4 or 5 days last December and just say, hey, let's learn the songs, everybody show up, and we'll go in and we'll see what happens.
Talk about the range of songs that are on the record and whether they are protest songs or just more of a kind of social moment kind of songs.
Well, I think it runs the gamut. And I think it's really interesting insofar as that I think, you know, we're in a kind of in a climate of protest, but everybody's protest, you know, the protesters are protesting each other, you know. So whereas this is just sort of more like it's a point of view and a statement, I think, about some things that are broken, but also there's a lot of moments of celebration on the record, you know, from America the Beautiful, which is sort of just like, yeah, you know what? I'm not completely happy with the way everything is, which I think that to a man or to a woman is a pretty, you know, comprehensive statement in the society, you know, and as citizens of a society, I would think that, you know, it's our responsibility to speak up when there's things that we don't like. You know, whatever your ideology is or whatever your political beliefs are.
Yeah, and I've been here 50 years. I haven't seen a time where complacency was warranted yet.
Sure.
It just comes in varying degrees, right?
Sure, but it's kind of nice, you know, and I think it sort of juxtaposes the light and the dark in terms of, you know, it's like, yeah, there we have some problems. We need to talk about things. We have to figure out solutions to problems. But at the same time, you know, a song like America the Beautiful, there's also a version of the John Denver song, Take Me Home Country Roads. It's sort of like, it's just, yeah, there's things that aren't right, but there's also a lot of great things. I think that's, you know, the reason why we all choose to live in this society and love our country and, you know, well, we can criticize it, but we can also shower praise on it at the same time. So those things to me were all appealing, you know.
72 is an interesting time because the Vietnam War hadn't quite ended, but it also wasn't 1968 or 69. The country had sort of, but we had Richard Nixon as president. And indeed, it was not quite the season when the country was beginning to realize that there was this Watergate problem and that there was a real potential crisis coming. So it's odd. Can you kind of compare and contrast what you feel coming off that 1972, what felt important to say, versus now, which is riddled with technology issues and social media and anonymity and all these crazy postmodern problems, but also some very old-fashioned issues with abuse of power and deep, deep concern about our security based on who the president is. So it's the same and it's different. I'd love for you to tackle that fraught minefield if you'd like.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was a really interesting time, especially like you mentioned, like 68 with, you know, MLK and Bobby Kennedy being assassinated. Like, and this record has Abraham, Martin, and John. Like, it has songs that deal with that. But it was kind of in the wake of that period when it originally came out. Today, it's obviously different, but there are still some of these same issues kind of bubbling. A lot of the racial problems from that period, from 68 to 72, have improved in many ways, but they're still a problem. And it's crazy that we're still having like white supremacist marches and kind of giving a voice to that movement. And that's one of the threads in the record. I think that there's today and for a long time, maybe since Vietnam, there's a distrust of our government, and there's almost an assumption that the government is lying to us, whether it's, you know, Trump or any other president. It's kind of like the assumption is, well, all the presidents gotta tell lies, you know, or to get elected you gotta say this or that. And there's still a feeling of like yearning for truth, like wanting someone to be straight with you. And wanting leaders to be righteous and to at least, you know, say what they mean and then do what they say. And so
An interesting contrast with the job description of being a songwriter, where truth is expected. That's what we all show up for. That's what people show up to work to do, and what the audience needs and craves, which is why music really thrives in times like this, I think.
Yeah, I think it's one of the reasons we need music, you know, and art in general is we're easily distracted, whether it's the pull of power or money or just the distraction of social media on our phone. You know, it's like it's nice to have music as a beacon of truth and you know, it's good for all of us.
Do you all anticipate or hope for or imagine a reception once this record hits? Would you like it to stir conversation, pro and con, positive and negative? Will you test whether this record is successful by the debate and conversation that's kind of flares up around it? Have you thought about that?
Yeah, we've been talking about that a lot because we've already gotten some heated feedback from a song or two that we've released. And one of the things I think for me, success would be being able to have civil conversations about these things again, because I feel like we've lost that ability as a culture. It's the left and the right, and it's, you know, it's just kind of a bunch of shouting and everyone's been so polarized that it's us against them. And we don't believe that as a band. I mean, and that's one thing we love about music too, is like its ability to bring people together regardless of what they believe. And I think that we all want to make positive change, but I think we think that most people kind of want the same things for themselves and for their families. It's just like how we get there that's what we disagree on, and that's okay. Absolutely. But we need to be able to have those conversations and not hate each other. And that's one thing that we hope this record, I think, does, is maybe highlight some of the issues, but also, like, you know, hey, let's have a positive conversation about it.
You just released a single, Hey Mister, from the original Ray Charles record, a plea to power, a plea to Congress, legitimately, like, you know, write your congressman, and the sense that this could be a futile gesture, right? So, Ed, what would you say about this song and why you chose it to sort of pluck out of the record to release now?
Well, I think, to me, it's sort of, on a musical level, it's effective in two ways. It's got, it has a great message, a very specific kind of, you know, a kind of plea, and it's pretty verse by verse kind of lays it out. But it also has a great groove. It kind of accomplishes both things with music that I always think is kind of the key, you know, get everyone moving, and then you can tell them something, and maybe you'll get, you know, maybe you can get a little bit to stick, and it, you know, it makes an impression. But, you know, in terms of how that fits into the way things are now, or the way things always have been, it's sort of like, you know, I think people sometimes forget, it's like we're, you know, we elect people to represent us. And sometimes we elect those people and they don't really represent us the way that we would like them to represent us. So it's our duty as, you know, participants in the democracy and as citizens to let them know this should be a dialogue. Like, again, it's our responsibility to express the things we like and that we don't like, and to make sure our leaders are aware of that. And that, that's what they're making their decisions based on, not on other things.
Hovering in the background of this is the spirit of the late George Reef. And I'd love you to mention who that is. You've dedicated the record to him.
Yeah, George was a mentor of ours, a great bass player in his own right, a great producer. He produced a couple of records for us over the years. And, you know, through working together and collaborating, we just developed a great friendship. You know, it's the kind of thing, especially in a community like Austin, there's a really close-knit musical collaborative. And, you know, it's kind of a situation where George had done and seen a lot of things that we hadn't yet, and he sort of took us under his wing and, you know, taught us, like, hey, these are the things you want to do, these are the things you don't want to do, this is what to look out for. And I think he really just helped us become a better band, you know. So from that introduction in our relationship, it kind of went on to a deeper friendship and you know, a mentoring over mm-hmm. the years.
And he passed away, and you worked in his studio to make this project. Well, backing up then just real quick, let's just take the pulse of the Band of Heathens. Here you are more than a dozen years into your life cycle and lifespan, and that's an accomplishment in itself. Growing and rocking, and the last record, Duende, did very well. And just kind of what's been going on lately that has got your moment, you know, that's got you excited about your momentum, and whether indeed you'll follow up this cover album with something coming up soon.
Yeah, I mean, we're really excited about this record, obviously. We had a lot of fun making it. I think it was sort of a good recharge, a good experience in the studio, just working collaboratively and creating something quickly and, you know, spontaneously.
Yeah.
But yeah, like always, there's a lot of writing in process right now, and, you know, hopefully we'll be in the studio later this year or the beginning of next year to work on another record of original material, because that's, I mean, ultimately for us, that's kind of the reason why we're doing this, you know. And touring and everything else that goes along to support this is sort of to allow us, I mean, I look at it as a privilege, really. Like, it allows us the privilege to go in and make new music and share it with people. And we've been fortunate enough that enough people, they like that music and they support it, and they want to, you know, so then we can go out and play shows and make records and kind of keep things going, you know. It's it sounds overly simplistic, but it's, you know, that's sort of, we've always sort of looked at things, you know, building them very slowly, you know, and we kind of have done that. We've been fortunate, I guess, in that we're able to still keep doing it.
Gordy, you mentioned side projects, and just wanted to ask about one I saw you involved in just recently, Bruce Robeson's Next Waltz series, which I think I'm going to do a story about on its own. It's a wonderful series. And there you were with Kevin Russell from Shiny Ribs, who is Shiny Ribs, and doing Broke Down Palace in a really tremendous version of a great song. What led to that, and does that speak to something else that you've been involved in with Bruce, or with the studio, or with that scene?
Yeah, so Bruce is doing really cool, like a series, you know, The Next Waltz, and that was my first time working on that. I think Some of the other guys in our band have done numerous sessions out there with him. But yeah, he just called up and said, "Hey, do you want to come? You know, you want to come play on this song?" And I had no idea whether I was playing guitar or singing. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of like show up and do I need to bring anything? You know, and we just kind of showed up, and it was a tune that we've played in the Band of Heathens many times. Kind of has a special place for us. It's one of my favorite Grateful Dead tunes. And yeah, it was just really cool to kind of go in with no expectations and just other than to like to collaborate. And and Kevin sang it, and Kelly McQueen and I sang harmonies. And it was pretty much a live take, and that's kind of very Bruce's much, yeah. You know, there's no computers in that studio. It's microphones through a console straight to a tape machine. Mm-hmm. And so it's a fun way to record, and not that different from the way we do things. And it was just fun to kind of bring a bunch of people in from different corners of Austin and and cut that track.
I know y'all are Grateful Dead fans. I feel like lately I have sensed just a bit of an uptick in the appreciation and gratitude and admiration for the Dead and their repertoire than I used to feel. Whereas I think I would have said 5-10 years ago that the Americana world was kind of split on their respect for the Dead. So there's quite a bit of dismissing going on. Maybe it's because I just did a long piece with Cordovas from here in Nashville, who sort of forged their sound by, I don't know, building a repertoire of covers, and they will you know, praise them chapter and verse. And but I do you sense that? Is there a bit of I saw y'all shout out on Jerry's birthday recently, are you feeling that too, or am I alone here?
I think that's true. I think the one thing. Like, I didn't grow up a huge Dead fan. I kind of came to the Dead late,
yeah.
Whereas some other guys in the band, I mean, Ed is reaching for the microphone right now. Ed is deep into the Dead, and Trevor, our keys player, is definitely way into the Dead. But for me, it's tunes like Broke Down Palace. Like, their catalog, I've always, growing up, being more into, like, the countryside or the songwriter side of music, in my mind, I didn't look at their catalog, like, as the songs. I view them as a band, as a unit that did they were an amazing band, an improvisational machine that was just amazing. And then the culture around it was amazing. And I feel like that obscured how great the songs were for me. And it took me time to actually dig deep into the catalog and be like, wow, just the songs themselves, apart from how great the band was, the songs just are amazing. And that's one thing I think in the Roots community, I think hopefully that's, you know, being recognized.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I think the same thing. I think the Dead are such a diverse recording entity and a creative thing that you almost need a yogi to sort of steer you into it. You know, like you know, someone to guide you on the trip to say, oh, I know you're kind of into this kind of stuff. Oh, you should listen to Sugar Magnolia and Ripple, you know, or like, you know, you meet a friend that's into more out stuff. It's like, okay, you should check out Dark Star and you should listen to Terrapin Station. You know, it's like they're a kind of a band that's unique in that way, where it's like, you know, someone like Bob Seger, it's like, I love Bob Seger, but you can kind of drop someone in to Bob Seger Against the Wind or Bob Seger Night Moves, and it's like, you know what I mean, you're kind of getting the whole picture. Where it's like kind of what Gordy's saying, it's like if somebody drops you into the middle of that universe and you're sort of unfamiliar with your surroundings and it's a spot that you're not comfortable with, you could definitely get turned off from it, you know. And I think in closing, like, the thing that's the most remarkable about this is the band is maybe bigger than they've ever been. The sort of creative fulcrum and center point of the band has been gone for over 20 years. So that, to me, specifically speaks about the strength of the catalog. And it is the songs, which is, you know, in the world of Americana, that's what's always touted as the number one thing. Well, okay, if we get back to that, it's like, the Grateful Dead have an insane catalog of music. And Jerry Garcia and Robert Hunter were, you know, two of the pioneers and really, you know, were kind of at the pinnacle of Americana songwriting. Yeah. So, you know, if you strip everything else away, I mean, that would be enough in and of itself.
Fantastic. Ed Gordy Quist, thanks for taking some time out.
Thank you. Man.